This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And our speaker comes to us from the Robbers Roost East Group in Dunwoody, Georgia. He gave me a very interesting way to introduce him, so I'm just going to let Art do that himself.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
My name's Art Sutherland. I'm an alcoholic. That's not how I suggested she introduce me. Let me by with just that so far, okay? Y'all hear the way, I mean, you're gonna hear the way I asked her to introduce me. Bald-headed asshole from Braselton. I've been called a lot worse even in sobriety. So, thanks, Tim. Thanks for the invite. And I do not believe in taking an inventory of the audience. But welcome, and I'm not going to pick on you, I assure you. But who else has got less than a year sobriety? Would you mind holding your hand up? Perfect. Man, that makes my job easy. Thank you. Cool. My sobriety date's January the 20th of 1998. What that means is, I looked it up before I came in here because I don't keep track of it that close, 9,744 one days at a time. That may not impress you, but it impresses the hell out of me and everybody that knew me before I got here. Now then, if I can pick on you for just a minute, because I was in your seat one time. This was my first AA meeting. I would not pick up it was in Huntsville, Alabama. I would not pick up a white chip. That was, you know, what? That's going to expose me. I mean, I'd been laying drunk in the street before, you know, that didn't seem to bother me. But I wasn't going to come pick up a white chip at a meeting. I picked up a 30-day chip. Came in here lying in my teeth, didn't I? So, I came to Atlanta then for treatment, and I went to a CA meeting up in Norcross called the Log Cabin Club, the end of the line group at the Log Cabin Club. And there was a man spoke there that had 6 or 7 years. I wanted 6 or 7 days. That's what I felt like 6 or 7 days would get the monkey off my back, you know. My wife would let me alone. My kids would think I was behaving correctly. And so I just couldn't believe somebody would want to stay sober for 6 years, 7 years. Why would you do that? And here I am, you know, telling y'all my sobriety date. And, you know, if I were you, I'd be looking at me saying, he's a lying zombie. He done admitted to lying. Here he goes again. But I hope, as I talk, I hope y'all hear my story well enough to know I earned my seat here, and I'm not going to talk too much about that. I earned my spot here. But as I was thinking, after Tim called, I was thinking about this, and I've been around a minute. I've got ups and downs in sobriety I can share with you. I would not stand up. Now, at a year sober, I might have stood up here and made it smell like roses. Because, man, I had an awesome first year of sobriety. You know. But I've been, you know, and you're going to hear more about, a little bit more about this, but I've been through bankruptcy. I've been through divorce in sobriety. I try my best to not be too emotional. I'm an emotional man, but I lost my mother, and she got to see me sober, and she got to see me be a decent son as she went downhill and we lost her. She won the battle, by the way. Let me tell you that my mama won the battle, but I sure do miss her. But you know, I haven't drank. And listen to me, if you're new and you're wondering how in the hell does some guy get 9,000 days, you only do it one day at a time. And sometimes you do it 5 minutes at a time. Pick up the phone. Call somebody. You know, and that's how I did it. That's how I did it. Thank God I didn't get divorced in my first year of sobriety. Because there was some garbage still needed to be unpacked around that relationship. Probably still some garbage that needs to be unpacked around that relationship. And I'll talk about that when I talk about the steps. The eighth step for me in that circumstance is a lot more important than the ninth step. The eighth step says I'm willing to make amends. And so I got to constantly check myself to see if I'm willing. And then when the opportunity presents itself, then I'll take action. That's good sponsorship. I didn't come up with that by myself. That's good sponsorship. I have a sponsor. In fact, I'm sponsored by the guy that sponsored me in my first year of sobriety today. We've gone full circle. I've had four sponsors. Two of them are past. And so I'm sponsored by a guy named Bill. And I'll tell you that story right quick. When I came in here the first time in 96, came to treatment in Atlanta in 96. 90-day program, they let me go at 88 days because I was so successful as a recovered alcoholic, man. I did it so good, they let me go at 88 days. They didn't make me stay the other 2 days. The truth is, the workers' comp insurance or something other was paying me like 70% of my normal salary while I was in rehab. And, you know, it was going to run out, so the treatment center let me go back in at 88 days. That's the truth. I like to tell it, though, like I was a really good alcoholic. I set out to do that. Hey, guys, well, I was a little... No, I'm lying again. Here you go. I like to tell the story that when I was a little bitty kid, I set out to be an alcoholic. That's what I wanted to be when I grew up. And if I ever grow up, maybe that'll be the case. But anyway, so let's move right along with this thing. Oh, I'm gonna point out some real significant things that let you know that AA works. And I'll prep this so y'all know when it's about to happen. In a few minutes, some of my so-called friends are stuck in traffic. They're going to come through that door. And pay attention to what I say when they come in here. And watch their reaction. And that's proof forever. You'll never need any other indication at all, whatsoever, that AA works. It'll be real obvious, so bear with me. I'll just interrupt. I'm good at squirrels. Squirrel. I'm really good at that. So this will work out real good. So, I did not drink until I was 21. I took my first drink of wine on the back porch of a renter house in Fairbanks, Alaska. I don't believe there's any great... I'm not a connoisseur of wine. Didn't like it then, don't like it now. If that had been all the alcohol there was, be a different speaker here. That would have been the only drink I'd ever took. That was nasty. No grapes involved, I'm quite certain. But anyway, the guy that offered me that glass of wine was my host at this house. We were working in Fairbanks, Alaska, trying to get out on the pipeline, and 75. And so he said, we'll go to the club tomorrow night. And so somewhere between the second and third Canadian Club and 7-Up, the magic happened. I grew up in a church. The rules of decorum for that church, decorum behavior, the rules of behavior for that church was we will not allow any member to make, sell, or drink intoxicating beverages of any kind. And I knew that. I used to tell that trying to make all y'all mad at the church because they kicked me out. But the fact is that I knew that rule when I joined that church. My mother was a charter member of that church. I knew that rule. I just chose to ignore it like most other rules. I'm a rule breaker. I'm a rule breaker. I probably broke the speed limit driving down here tonight. I'm sure I did. But yeah, no, don't encourage me. So, then that church rule says, or use illegal substances of any kind. They still have the rule about drinking. But I, you know, in violation of the AA singleness of purpose, I'm a cocaine addict as well. I've alcohol was doing wonders for me. I mean, it was headed down that dark path. But God saw fit to put cocaine in my path, and it helped me get there a lot quicker, I think. But The church changed the rules after my behavior. And I would not admit I was an alcoholic. I'm a grandiose kind of guy, and I had to be a cocaine addict. I would not admit I was an alcoholic. It took really getting beat up to become an alcoholic. I told somebody at the meeting last week that I go to, I said, I'm here by accident. I mean, it was really an accident. It was just a simple wrong turn. But no, I'm a full blown alcoholic, and I earned the seat. And you know, the thing that clued me in, there was a outpatient counselor at the outpatient thing in Huntsville, Alabama, that asked me one time, said, "When you bought cocaine, were you drinking?" And I was trying to be polite. But I went, "You crazy woman, why do you ask a question like that? What's that got to do with anything?" But it rang and it rang. It took another year or two for me to really admit I was an alcoholic. But I never bought cocaine in the first couple of years of use. I never bought cocaine without being significantly inebriated with alcohol. So that solved that dilemma for me when I finally admitted to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. And I didn't admit that to my innermost self until my sponsor says, right here, read that black part. Hey, Art, don't read the white part. Quit wasting time with the white part. Read the black part. And we had to fully concede to our innermost self we were alcoholic. When I did that, then I had to have some help. And he put me in a bad place. I mean, because now if I'm a full-blown alcoholic and there's no help, I heard what y'all read in meetings. You read it here? If there's no help, where do I go there? Okay, I'm in trouble. I'm an alcoholic. What do I do? And the solution is so simple. It was bigger than I to start with. It was way bigger. I could not imagine. And I've said this, and I've heard others say it since I said it. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Yeah, right. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another, ain't no way. I don't cop to nothing even if you have pictures. And so good sponsorship walked me through all that. Okay, so I jump around. I mentioned I like squirrels. You know, we got a backyard full of them. Tim invited me in the place of Helen. And we've got a host of ladies in here, but I assure you I'm not Helen. I promise. I met Helen at at the central office sometime, probably in my first year of sobriety. My sponsor says, go down there and just check it out. Go down there and look and see. And I was telling Tim before then, here's what God did for me. I walked in there. I didn't know her. I had just another lady working. And I didn't know. I didn't know nothing. And I'm self-centered in the extreme. Still am to some degree. But I didn't know her from Adam. Bill Roop and her were standing there having a conversation. And then when I called my sponsor that night, I told him, yeah, I went down to central office. There's this guy in there talking to this gal. And well, what's her names? And I told him. And he said, did you know you just met the two anchors of Alcoholics Anonymous in Atlanta, Georgia? I didn't, but I've been impressed with that ever since. To me today, that's God doing for me what I had no clue I needed done for me. Put me in the presence of two people that, you know, they're just normal people, look like to me. I didn't know. They're just normal people. But, wow. I was in touch with the heroes just like that. Just like that. And Helen would probably smack me for saying hero. I know Bill didn't like to be considered the hero. Bill and I was roommates at the Roanoke Men's Workshop. And he taught me how to pray. I was really struggling in that relationship, that marriage that I don't have anymore. And we talked about it. Just me and him in the room. He said, do this. Do you pray? I said, yeah. You pray out loud? Why, no. No. I'm still ego-driven. I ain't praying out loud. He said, no. And he got, get down here with me. We got down on our knees. And he said, you reach over. She don't have to get down. You reach over and you touch her. And you say, thank you, God, for my wife and my life. You say that out loud. And I'm sure our marriage survived another 10 years. I was 10 or 12 years sober when we finally called it quits. And I'm sure that prayer out loud had a lot to do with it. Very grateful for that. I didn't really intend to tell that, but when we talked about Bill, I wanted to mention that. Bill had a tremendous effect on my life. And he probably didn't even realize the effect he's having on my life. But so, I started out drinking. And then that led into that white powder alcohol stuff. And so then I did a geographical from Fairbanks, Alaska, back to my home in Arab, Alabama. And I can go within, I know from here to Tim back there, to where I threw 8 grams of cocaine out the window and I quit. Cold turkey. Just like that. I say cold turkey, that's not true. I got involved in this church again. And today, guys, I'm not a down on the church, but be careful in any emotional environment you get wrapped up in, because if you're emotional like me, you can get caught up in that. And I did. I was active in the church. They didn't turn the lights on the church but while I was there. And I stayed sober for 8 years, something like that. It's stayed dry and clean. I wouldn't even pretend to call it sober. And probably did more damage in those 8 years to my marriage and my children, 2 daughters, than I did while I was using. Because I didn't use around them. I was gone. I was gone. If I was going to drink or get on a drug run, I'd leave. I'd just gone. Anyway. I got busted at work. A customer that I was walking their job house, or walking their house looking at structural work. That's what I do. And I was high as a flipping kite. And they called my boss. And not tattletaling. I don't want to tell it wrong. I used to tell it in a way where y'all get mad at the church, then you're mad at this customer. Because they told tattle. It wasn't it at all. It turns out when I did the ninth step with this boss that they talked to, He said, well, those folks wasn't trying to get you in trouble. They were just concerned. They were, I don't know them from Adam. I'd love to walk into them in Birmingham, Alabama and tell them thank you. That's what I'd love to do. But I have no idea. And I don't even remember the address or the customer's name. Imagine that. Go figure that. But so anyway, moving right along here, I wound up in rehab. He said, you got to get help. We'll keep you employed. I mean, I'm a high school graduate. I was making six figures. I mean, it was a sales job, and I was nailing it to the floor. And more money than I ever dreamed I'd make. But, okay. So we were on this, what do they call it? Short-term disability. Short-term disability. They had 90 days of short-term disability, and they'd pay me 70% of what. So I came to Mar here in Atlanta and stayed sober that 90 days and six more months after that I didn't use. So they told me what I learned when I came over here to Mars, here's your big book, get a sponsor, let us know who that is putting his name on a meeting sheet, you got to go to 7 meetings a week. And so I turned that in, and Jim was my sponsor. His name was on the meeting sheet every week. He didn't know he was my sponsor, though. That don't work. But I went back to Arab, went back to work, back in that job, and man, you know, killing it again. I mean, it hadn't missed a beat. And some things got sideways, and at 9 months, just hold. You know what got sideways? My AA meeting in Arab, Alabama didn't have a 9-month chip. They didn't have a 9-month chip. They offered me a 6-month chip and a 90-day chip, and it pissed me off. That's the best excuse I got to go get drunk. I mean, seriously, that's the best excuse I got. Can y'all hear the insanity of that? You reckon I had a problem admitting I was powerless? Let's see. Come to believe, restore me to sanity. You reckon I had a problem with that? Yes, I pretended like I was sane. But what y'all just heard come out of my mouth is true evidence beyond any doubt that I was an insane son of a gun. That's why I went and got drunk. Never went back, hadn't been back to that meeting yet. Now, I did, when I picked up, I went to a meeting in Cumming, Alabama, because there's a cute little girl there that I wanted to get to know better. I had the rig in my pocket, and I went and I shot dope in the bathroom of that meeting, and come in back in the meeting and whined about how bad my life was. Now then, so I came in here knowing that my mother's a charter member of that church where I broke that rule. Church ain't going to have nothing to do with me. Treatment acted like they wanted to help me, but they gave me a big book, told me to go to meetings, sign the sheet, write this down on the sheet. And now I had shot dope in an AA meeting in Cullman, Alabama. You reckon AA's going to have anything to do with me? I didn't think so. I didn't think so. Good sponsorship walked me through that. Good sponsorship prepared me for the next step. And I went back to Cullman. Skip around a little bit. I get to some more steps stuff in a minute. But went back to Cullman to that meeting and told them what I just told y'all. What did they say? Glad you made it back, son. Hugged me. Hugged me like they knew me. I mean, man, those people hugged me like they knew me. And I understand that today. I understand it. There is not one thing that anyone in this room can do that'll separate you from the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that with every bit of me. Don't go try it. You don't have to go try it just to prove me wrong. That's not the purpose of me saying that. But what I've come to believe is that the solution to every problem I have is love. And here I am, I thought about getting some kind of a halo tattoo on my head, you know, because I got tattoos all over. I like to look like I'm a badass, but I'm a scared little boy. The fact is, I'm a scared little boy. Always have been. I skydived in Alaska to prove I wasn't afraid of nothing. I did 13 jumps out of an airplane. And you could, forgive me for this graph, you couldn't have took a hammer and a 16-penny nail and drove it in my butthole. You couldn't, neither time I jumped, it wouldn't have worked. So I'm ego-driven, scared little boy. And y'all have loved me from the day I got here. And I ain't always done it right. January of 98 was my last time to pick up a white chip. But it wasn't the last time I misbehaved. Last time I used, I haven't put anything mood or mind altering in my body. But my first mind altering substance was pornography. And I have struggled with pornography most of my sobriety. I have reached the ripe old age, and I wondered if it ever happened where pornography is not as big a deal to me anymore. You know, when you get to be as old as I flipping am. The mind still works, but that's about it. So, that's enough on any kind of drunkalogue. If I don't qualify to be here, then we probably ought to ask for another speaker. Tim, you got somebody step in. Anyway. So here's what I was taught about the steps. My sponsor says, when I asked Bill to sponsor me, he says, and I didn't hear it. If your sponsor asks you, this is a serious question, but if your sponsor asks you, are you willing to go to, we read it in every meeting, are you willing to go to any length? He blew right over that word any. I can do really good with that if you leave the word any out. Are you willing to go to a length, some length? But no, he said any length, and I didn't even catch it. Today I understand that's a, what an order, I can't go. We say that in the meeting too, what an order, I can't go through with it. What's the next word? Do not. Yeah. So, anyway, he said, and I just, you know, if your sponsor ain't got you reading 86 and 87 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, please take it from an old drunk. Start. Read 86 in the evenings. It tells us, let's see, I think I marked it. Yeah. When we retire at night, and there's a whole paragraph of instructions on what to do when we retire at night. Then it starts, the next paragraph says, on awakening. And it goes through that page and that page and the rest of that page about what to do on awakening. I've been doing it for 26 flipping years. It still works. I ain't changing it. In the morning, it won't be this book. This book stays in my truck. But I got a smaller AA book. I get my glasses first, sorry. I got to get my glasses. And yeah, I got to get my glasses. I put them on that small book. And I read what this says on awakening. And I could probably, I resist the tendency or the urge to quote it. I could probably quote it. I've been reading it for a long dang time. I could probably quote it. But I don't. I wouldn't pretend to quote it. I love to read it. Read the black part. Old Bill says, hey, Art, quit spending so much time on the white part. Read the black part. That's where the magic is. Okay. So, 86 and 87. And so, you know, it occurred to me after 6 months of reading that I'm over there in step 10 or 11, step 11. And, you know, he's taking me through the steps. We did the steps with my first sponsors in less than 6 months. And I think that's awesome. I think that was the right way for this alcoholic. Now, I've been back through them several times. The two sponsors that have passed, both of them took me through the steps. I'm taking a guy up in Commerce, Georgia, through the steps tonight, or now. We meet every Friday night. We do step work. And wait until you get the opportunity to take somebody through the steps. That's when you really learn some stuff about yourself. That's for me. That's when I learned some stuff about myself. So, anyway, When we got in, the other assignment was read two pages at least a day. I read 86 and 87. I read that 86 part when I retire at night, and I read that bottom of 86 and the rest of the chapter when I get up in the morning. But I read at least two more pages in the big book every day. And I've been doing that for a minute. And it ain't going to change. Now, doggone it, something happened along the way. And all these knuckle bumps that y'all see up on my bald head, I learned that if it's working, don't try to fix it. Don't try to fix it. So I just keep doing that. And so what he taught me about steps was, after we went through the steps, he said, let's talk about those steps in this context. Those first three steps get you prepared to do the work. Those are more mental, more cerebral. I don't even like that word. That's too many syllables for a boy from Alabama. Cerebral. I hope I got it right. But that's the first three steps. Then four and five hooks me up with me. If I don't take a real inventory, and I hear people all the time scared to death of four and five. And I was the same thing. I was scared to death of doing four and five. I told y'all earlier, I'm not going to cop to nothing, even if you got pictures. But when we did it, hurry through four and five. Be thorough. It says searching and fearless moral inventory. Be thorough, but don't waste no time on it. It ain't that big a deal. What I have learned by listening to a few fifth steps is, man, I'm a mellow drunk. I'm a tame ass drunk, man. I ain't got half the story some of y'all got. You know, so it ain't no big deal. It's all right. But four and five hooks me up with me. Six and seven hooks me up with God. If you look and read those carefully, hooks me up again with God, like the third step does. And then eight and nine hooks me up with y'all. If I really do amends the way the book and my sponsor taught me how to do it, then I win. And it hooks me back up with society. Then 10, 11, 12 is the same thing. 10 hooks me personal inventory. If I do 10 the way it's lined out in the book, man, I don't have a great big old long ass four step to do again. I do a daily 10 step. And 11, salt through prayer and meditation. And I don't do it just in the mornings. And, you know, there's a lot of days, guys, when I go with the prayer on my heart all day. I mean, you know, it's crazy. In Atlanta traffic, I can pray. Usually I am. God, take care of that asshole before I do. No, I'm serious. But then 12, you know, having had a spiritual, the whole message of this thing is carry the message. Help that next guy. And so I like the way he broke that down for me. I break it down. The first three gets me prepared to do the work. And they really are about me and God and others. But then five and six, or four and five, and six and seven, eight and nine, and then 10, 11, 12 does the same thing. So I want to talk a little bit real quick about the ninth step. One of the things I did that I was so ashamed of was I got two daughters, 2 years apart, and I stole every bit of the money they had in their savings account and bought dope with it. And, I get a call from one of them, and she says, "Dad, do you know what happened to our money?" "Yeah, I'll put it back in there this week. I get paid Friday. I'll put it back in there. I borrowed it." And so when I told my sponsor that story, just like I told y'all, he said, "You stole it. Borrowed it, my ass. You stole it." And that's what I did, you know. And so today I subscribe to the lesson that if I take something without your knowledge, I'm stealing it. If I take something without talking to you about it first, then I'm stealing it. Lying is very similar, you know. I'm not as bad as I used to be, but if I could sense that you were thinking something from what I said that might not be true, I'd correct it. I'd fix it. I'm not as bad as I used to be with that. You know, I used to tell you, well, no, you heard me wrong. You know, and now I'll pretty much say, oh, that's a lie. Y'all heard me. How many times have I caught myself lying up here from the podium? It's not supposed to do that. I hope you don't send this to my sponsor. Doggone it, man. Lying from the podium. Good night. So, making amends to them, I came in here and I read that up there. And when I got past admitting to God, to ourselves, and another human being, and I, you know, read the rest of it, I wasn't going to do five. But then I got over there and made make amends to such people, my daughters, April and Ariel. And, okay. So I'm working a little job, little pissant job, and I'm saving money, man. I'm saving money every week, saving money every week. And so when it got to the ninth step, he said, okay, what's on your list you want to do? And I said, I told him, I want to go to Alabama this weekend. I got a TL with the treatment center. I'm going to Alabama this weekend, give them their money back. Oh, is that what you're going to do? No, that's not what you're going to do. You're going to go tell them what you did. You're going to go tell them that you can give them $30 or $50 a week or whatever. You're going to make an agreement with them. First of all, you're going to tell them what you did and ask them if that sounds right. And then put whatever number they put on it. If they double the number, don't bat an eye. You take that number. And then you tell them you can't pay them all at once because you're just grandiose. You want to go over there and throw the money on the bed and tell them sorry and walk out like you're some fancy, healthy dad and you're a sick son of a gun still. And so that offended me a little bit. Hurt my feelings. But that's the way I did it. And that guidance from that sponsor has, now my youngest daughter, Ariel, I don't have a relationship with her. But if I called my oldest daughter, April, tonight and said, I need you, she'd be here as fast as she could get here. The reason I believe that, I made the same amends to both of them, and I had a great relationship for a long time. But my youngest daughter is a lot like her daddy, hard-headed in the extreme. And so I was working with another guy, more night step, working with a guy that spoke at a workshop in Colorado. And he says, do this. Here's what my sponsor told me. You either write them a letter and hand it to them, write it down on a piece of paper and hand it to them. What was it like having me for a dad? And then you don't say another word. And so I did that. Me and April have gone through that process. Me and Ariel's acted like she never got the paper. And I mean, I handed it to her. I know she read it. You know, there's where we are. There's still hope, though. She's still breathing. I'm still breathing. There's still hope. So that's been my journey. I mentioned bankruptcy. I mentioned divorce. What else did I mention? Mother passing away. Not one time in any of those circumstances did I think about drinking as a solution to the pain. Now, I'm an alcoholic. I think about drinking every day. You know, I think about it. It's a thought. My sponsor described to me the difference in a thought and a... Somebody say it. Obsession. Thought and obsession is a thought that overrides all other thoughts. So I called him up. I called Bill up one night and I said, man, I've been obsessing bad today. He said, did you use? I said, no. He said, well, you've just been using thoughts then. That's all you've been doing. Obsession is a thought that overrides all other thoughts. And if you do that, you're screwed. You got to come pick up a white shift. Y'all got one. Y'all got one. So that was good clarity on the difference in a thought and obsession. And I've learned in this time I've been here that if I do a word dance, I'm becoming a connoisseur of words. If I really study the black part in the book, it becomes really clear, and the message is so clear, and it's so upbuilding and so powerful, so freeing. So I highly recommend the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I highly recommend sponsorship. And I recommend getting to be a sponsor as soon as you can. Don't be. I've got my guy up in Commerce. He's ready to start sponsoring guys, but he won't hold his hand up in the meeting. That's the assignment this week. He's got Friday night. He better tell me he's held his hand up in meetings to be a sponsor, and because he's ready. He's further along than I was your first day, dude. He could sponsor you, you know. Shoot. He ain't done with the steps, but he's ahead of that guy that needs to just start tonight, you know. So that's really how it works for me. Well, my boys didn't make it. I'm done. So I'm going to tell y'all what I do, because if they come in, I'm going to interrupt the meeting before. If they happen to get here before, I'm going to interrupt the meeting. I was born and raised in Alabama. I'm a huge Alabama fan. And Roll Tide. That's what I was going to say when they come in the door. But the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous, not one of y'all, are all y'all Alabama fans? Not one of y'all. Yeah, see, there you go. Not one of y'all got up and left the room. That's what I wanted to razz Jeff about. That, you know, if they got here, I was going to razz them about, you know, shoot, hey, say Roll Tide from the podium and they don't even leave the room. That's magical in Alcoholics Anonymous. Watch what happens Saturday on the football field. And you would think we wouldn't even stay in the room together. But anyway, I hope you've got something out of what I've shared with you tonight. It's been a little bit scattered, feels like to me. But the message, the only message I got, guys, it doesn't matter. The only difference in me and you, sir, is I'm not willing to trade these days for just one day again. I'm just not willing to do it. But I remember what it was like. I definitely remember what it's like. And God's been so good to me. I've retired twice, working on a third retirement. And it's because I love to work. And I ought to retire and just hang out with Tim at the AA meetings all the time. That's what I ought to do, because it's where I get the most joy. Guys, I was scared to death when I got here. I would not pick up a white chip because I was scared y'all would think I was a drunk. I was. I don't know why that bothered me. I was. But here, just a few days later, and I've got a life beyond my wildest dream. I didn't talk about my current wife. Me and I was married 31 years, and we went through a horrible, knockdown, drag out divorce. And I'm in the program. I wasn't willing to fight. I wasn't willing. I just wasn't. But it had to be some fighting going, you know. So we did. And but I have another lady. God's put another woman in my life. It's not one of us. There's Crown Royal in my refrigerator out in the garage at my house now. But I'm free of that. And she don't drink much anyway. And she did when I first met her. She'd drink a little bit. So I got to live vicariously through her on a couple of drunks. I'll tell you this story real quick. If she hears this tape, gosh, she'll shoot me. So it's her 50th birthday, and we're going out to party, you know. And some guys I knew was playing the band at the bar. They're the band. And so she gets sick. And we just had a cardboard box in the car for her throw-up in coming back. And she's so embarrassed. Oh, my, she's so embarrassed. But so the next time, it's like a year later, it's now 51 birthday. We all dressed up. We're going out. She's walking to the car. She stops. She turns around. She goes back in the garage, and she gets a little gallon garbage can, plastic garbage. That woman was a Girl Scout, too, by golly, I promise you. That's it for me, guys. Thanks so much.
It's always fun to laugh and, you know, chuckle along, but anytime I get to see someone speak with rigorous honesty, it encourages me to do the same. So thank you, Art.
last night I truly hit a new low. Came to when somewhere strange to me. As I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down. Right now feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take the edge, you see. I got nowhere to hide. An empty hole inside. It's the Bible, the book, or the gun for me. Seems like everyone's out to get me. Trouble always following me. Feeling like I just can't outrun. Demons that are all around me. The gun for me.